This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on with all this Epstein stuff? I will give you my thoughts. We also are going to bring in Mike Benz, who is going to drop more information on you than you can possibly fathom. We'll touch on those horrible floods in Texas and more coming up on Armstrong. Okay, I know what's on your mind. And I'm going to warn you right now that this show is going to be incredibly informative, especially when Mike Benz joins us here in about 10 minutes. But I'm about to say some things that may make you angry. And I've done this before. I will do it again, because here's what happens. We can, all of us, myself included, we can find ourselves getting whipped up in the mob, the rage mob, anger over something. Oftentimes that anger is justified. Oftentimes that anger is righteous. But you're mad about it, and he's mad about it, and he's mad about it. And so perhaps right now you're tuning into I'm Right, and you're thinking, well, Jesse's about to sign on here and call everybody at the FBI a bunch of dirty criminals, and Pam Bondi's a dirty criminal, and Jeffrey Epstein did it, and the government's covering it up. And, well, kind of. I'm going to do some of that. But here's the reality of it. We form a picture in our mind of what has happened. We form a picture. Most people have this picture in their mind. Jeffrey Epstein, wealthy billionaire, trafficked underage women to the most powerful people in the world in conjunction with the government, FBI, CIA, somebody. And now the government, in order to cover its own rear end, they're covering the entire thing up. I would bet you money that's exactly the picture you have in your mind. And I'm not telling you you're wrong, by the way. But what happens is, once you get that picture in your mind, you want everybody you listen to on the radio or watch on the television set, you want them to confirm what you have in your mind. So allow me to explain my thoughts. I know about the leak, the Axios leak, where there's no client list. The FBI says that there's no evidence Jeffrey Epstein was blackmailing somebody, and that there's no client list. And people are bringing up things like Pam Bondi and her going on TV and saying things like this.
The DOJ may be releasing the list of Jeffrey Epstein's clients. Will that really happen?
It's sitting on my desk right now to review. That's been a directive by President Trump. I'm reviewing that. I'm reviewing JFK files, MLK files. That's all in the process of being reviewed, because that was done at the directive of the president from all of these agencies.
So have you seen anything that you said, oh my gosh?
Not yet.
Okay. So let's be adults about this, and let's walk through this. Did Pam Bondi say there was a list? You just watched the clip. Did Pam Bondi say there was a client list? No. That's what the host said. I'm not criticizing the host. I'm not even criticizing Bondi. She said it's on my desk. What's on her desk? A file. A file created by whom? We don't know that it was Jeffrey Epstein's file. Do you believe that if Jeffrey Epstein was a criminal trafficking underage women, that he had a Microsoft Word document on his computer that says client list on it? Is that what you believe? Pause on that for a moment. You know who John Connolly is? You ever heard that name? I'm going to sidetrack for a moment. Just stay with me. John Connolly was an FBI agent. John Connolly had a friend, quite a friend. Friend from childhood, a friend whose name you do know for sure. His name is Whitey Bulger. Famous, famous Boston area gangster. They had known each other since they were children. Whitey Bulger chose a different path, and John Connolly chose the FBI. Now, Whitey Bulger, as you can imagine, knew a whole lot about the underworld, all kinds of things, drugs, you name it, dealings with the Italian mafia, structures of families. Anybody who's that high up in the underworld is going to be a wealth of information. John Connolly, ambitious young FBI agent, wanted to be promoted like all ambitious people do, knows Whitey Bulger. They come to an agreement. The agreement was Whitey's going to give John Connolly information. Information that is going to allow John Connolly to look really, really good and smart to his bosses as he busts dirty people in the underworld. But there's always an exchange, right? In exchange, John Connolly looked out for Whitey Bulger in terrible ways, ways that were illegal. He ended up going to prison for all this, spoiler alert. But John Connolly protected his asset, from prosecution. Whitey Bulger was an asset to John Connolly. John Connolly, in return, protected Whitey Bulger. This is not a one-off story about John Connolly and Whitey Bulger in Boston. It's not even a one-off story about the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is how the CIA works, the FBI works, local police departments work. You will work with bad people. You will protect those bad people from prosecution in exchange for something. Now, that brings me specifically to this story around Epstein, the DOJ, FBI, CIA. Do you remember Kash Patel got confirmed in February, and I came on here and I said this?
He has a mountain to climb. An evil secret state police agency is not just going to lay down for the new director. They have been working tirelessly since Donald Trump won that election to hide their evil deeds. God only knows how many emails have been deleted, phone records, evidence. God only knows the horrible things they've been doing as they prepare to have someone come in and shed light on them.
Remember how angry I got that Republicans were allowing Democrats to delay confirmations of Pam Bondi, Kash Patel? Remember the one big Trump nominee who didn't get through? There was one. It was actually his first one, as a matter of fact. All the other ones, as controversial as they may have been to the media, all the other ones eventually got through. The president gets his nominees. We have the House. We have the Senate. But there was one guy who was a bridge too far. Not even Donald Trump, having freshly won the election, super popular with the bully pulpit, not even Donald Trump could get Matt Gaetz into the attorney general chair. They stopped Matt Gaetz immediately and then stonewalled his replacement for as long as humanly possible. Now, let's just say, for the sake of argument here, that Jeffrey Epstein was working with the FBI, CIA, somebody. Sort of a Whitey Bulger type scenario, arrangement, if you will. Jeffrey Epstein is providing this. They are in turn protecting him from that. Do you think if you're at the FBI, CIA, do you think if you have a file revealing your horrible deeds and things you've done with Jeffrey Epstein, do you think you're just going to what? Let it sit on your desk? You think you're going to just put a big file like that on your desk, maybe put a pack of cigarettes on it and just kind of wait there? Well, this is the file. I'm just going to wait around until there's a new FBI director, till there's a new attorney general. And I hope nobody finds it. You do remember that a paper shredder truck was parked outside of the DOJ, right? You know that criminals in the government and outside of it, they destroy evidence that links them to crimes. You know that, right? Of course you know that. You're an adult. You get it. That's what happens. Why do you think they stopped Matt Gaetz and then delayed Pam Bondi and Kash Patel for as long as humanly possible? Do you think they were twiddling their thumbs at the FBI, at the CIA, throwing a big party? Let me tell you something else I know. This is from a source I have. I was told by this source that that time was spent. Evil people in these organizations were putting up, how did they put it to me? Tripwires all over the place. Oh, I realize Cash Patel is now the head of the FBI. I know Pam Bondi's the AG. My goodness, she's the head over all of it. And so you, me, we want results. I want the client list. I want the names of all the bad people. I want everybody going to prison. I want you to fix all this stuff right now. But I'm here to tell you, criminals delete evidence of their crimes. Even Pam Bondi got stonewalled by the FBI?
A source told me New York, SDNY, they're sitting on thousands of pages of documents regarding Epstein. Thousands, thousands. And of course, you've seen the very strong letter. We will get everything. We will have it in our possession. We will redact it, of course, to protect grand jury information.
Pam Bondi said, have the files on my desk. Head of the New York field office said, sorry, I don't have time. Gotta go have a beer. The FBI is a 35,000 person agency. CIA, God knows how many actually work for that. DOJ as well. Years and years and years and years and years, these organizations have been filled up with committed communists, committed to destroying America, committed to protecting themselves, protecting their organizations. You, me, we want information. We want results right away. We want the FBI, DOJ, CIA, come out. No, no, no. You tell me who the bad guys are. We're in charge now. Why won't you tell me? Do you think all the criminals inside of these organizations are all gone? Come on, be serious. So many of them are right where they've always been. They use their time wisely to cover up for themselves. You possibly, probably got angry at the thought that the DOJ was saying there's no evidence of a client list. There probably isn't. If there was, it was destroyed long ago. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Mike Benz is about to join us. And he's about to drop more Jeffrey Epstein knowledge on you than you've ever heard in your entire life. I promise you, cross my heart and hope to die, you're about to learn a lot about this guy's sordid history, Central Intelligence Agency, and other things. All right? Before we do that, better get your mind right for this next interview. And that's what Chalk's all about. Getting our minds right. You just, as we get older, and as our levels get off in our body, a fog descends onto our minds. Maybe you oftentimes say things like, oh, I was a senior moment. Oh, I forgot what I was thinking. What did I do? You know, that's because your levels are off. Do you know that if you started out every single day with chocolate powder in a glass of milk, a smoothie, that you would see differences in your mind? It's packed full of vitamins and minerals, all natural, by the way. These are all natural herbal supplements. No more chemicals in your body. Stop putting that garbage in there. Trust Chalk to make your life better. Start taking something. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day. I've been on it over 3 years. I've never taken anything for over 3 years. I feel like a new person. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, when you're having discussions about assets, intelligence operations, possibly suicides, murders, things like that, I don't know that there's anybody better we could bring on to discuss all the ugliness than Mike Benz, Executive Director, Foundation for Freedom Online, always putting wisdom on us. All right, Mike, so the Epstein files, everyone's talking about it right now. The news drops on Sunday that it looks like we're kind of walking away from the whole thing. I don't know. I gave my thoughts, Mike. I have a hard time believing that they were sitting on evidence of their crimes for a long time and just without shredding them or deleting them. I just have a hard time believing it's still there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's a strange sequence that we ended up here. It looks like there was somebody maybe inside DOJ who gave this Justice Department memo to Axios. It doesn't look like the DOJ has formally acknowledged this at this point. As of the time of our recording, there's been very loud cricket sounds that I hear outside, but no kind of official acknowledgement. In fact, Axios even deleted the document that they uploaded, so that even in the article itself, you can no longer see it. But of course, the internet pulled that immediately, and now we're here where the, you know, the official word is no client list. The suicide estimation by the FBI is now being ratified by DOJ. And this is definitely an escalation in terms of what had been hinted at through FBI earlier. DOJ is the keeper of the interagency and the interagency secrets. FBI is, of course, primarily for domestic intelligence. It's the intelligence arm of DOJ, but FBI is firewalled from CIA on many things. And it has been my contention all along that what you're dealing with Epstein is the CIA network, not the FBI network. In fact, the FBI, to the extent that this was an intelligence asset or an intelligence network around Epstein, the FBI would be studiously firewalled off from that in order to avoid giving a legal predicate for federal law enforcement to make arrests of folks who were involved in U.S. statecraft or any sort of international statecraft or intelligence that the U.S. wants to keep going.
Mike, you say CIA. Describe what you think. I mean, I'm assuming some of this is theory because we're never going to know, but what do you think Epstein was to the CIA?
Well, I think Epstein was working with the CIA in the early 1980s at the very start of his career after he left Bear Stearns. In 1981, right after leaving Bear Stearns, Jeffrey Epstein created a one-person for-profit company in his one-bedroom New York apartment. It was called the Intercontinental Assets Group. And it held itself out as an international bounty hunter for high net worth individuals to both recover money and shield money internationally. So the right away in 1981, he starts this company that basically helps that helped royalty and high net worth individuals basically recover loan debts or assets owed to them that were held in cryptic offshore bank accounts, as well as helping them structure their own assets in a way that would make it difficult or impossible for others to collect those assets. And in 1982, just 1 year into that, he got a fake passport, an Austrian passport listing his residence is Saudi Arabia. This is a fake passport. This was recovered by the FBI in 2019 when they drilled a hole in Jeffrey Epstein's safe and recovered this. Prosecutors held this passport up at the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. This fake passport was so good that it was able to go through four different country checkpoints. It had a false name, but Jeffrey Epstein's photo so that he could get back and forth. And why Saudi Arabia? Well, because Jeffrey Epstein, one of his main clients for the group that he set up in 1981, was Adnan Khashoggi. Adnan Khashoggi was the CIA arms runner for the Iran-Contra affair. When Congress blocked the U.S. federal government through a congressional law called the Bolin Amendment, with the Democrats controlling the House of Representatives, banning any U.S. funds from being directed to the overthrow of the Nicaraguan Sandinista government. And the Reagan White House and National Security Council and Central Intelligence Agency wanted to do it anyway. They were left with a problem, which was that the CIA had been neutered during the Jimmy Carter years. There had been prohibitions on the categories of covert activity it could do, and the Bolin Amendment from Congress blocked them from using U.S. aid funds or State Department funds to run the operation. Enter Jeffrey Epstein and Adnan Khashoggi, his client. During the Iran-Contra affair, which dogged the entire Reagan administration when all this came out, the U.S. was selling arms to together with Israel to Iran, which is kind of ironic as we as the current geopolitics of Israel-Iran play out around missiles flying overhead earlier this month between those two countries. Israel and the U.S. were selling weapons to Iran at that time through Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi arms dealer who was had been working with the CIA for 30 years. In fact, this all came out in formal under oath testimony from the Paris office of BCCI, which was the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, one of the largest banks in the world, which was effectively a CIA proprietary bank for running arms to the Mujahideen when the CIA was creating the Islamo-terrorist network that would later become Al-Qaeda and then ISIS. Adnan Khashoggi was a client of that bank together with the CIA, and the head of the Paris branch said that Adnan Khashoggi personally told him that he was working for the Central Intelligence Agency, and Jeffrey Epstein was his money bundler. This is at the height of the Cold War, mind you. And so you see this relationship going back to the early 1980s. In 1985, Jeffrey Epstein becomes linked up with Les Wexner in Columbus, Ohio. Les Wexner was the head of what at the time was the largest retailer in the entire United States, Limited Brands, famous for Victoria's Secret and many, many others. Les Wexner's tax attorney, Arthur Shapiro, was murdered in a gangland-style assassination in 1985, the day before he was set to testify to the in an IRS grand jury investigation. The IRS had been looking into the Wexner Empire's finances and failure to, I think, file taxes for something like 5 years and 7 years of investigation. Arthur Shapiro, who ran that, was supposed to testify to the IRS grand jury just one day before he was gunned down. It was right after that that Jeffrey Epstein appears to meet Les Wexner and then go on to have durable power of attorney over the entire Wexner enterprise. It was then in 1993, Jeffrey Epstein personally negotiated the sale, the transfer of Air America, which would then become Southern Air Transport, a CIA proprietary airline, straight from Miami, where it got busted as part of the Iran-Contra gun trafficking and narcotics trafficking in order to run this illicit operation in Iran-Contra. That very airline used Jeffrey, and that Jeffrey Epstein was a critical part in the structuring of this CIA operation. He then negotiated the transfer of that CIA airliner straight to Columbus, Ohio, where the Wexner Empire was based, for the primary purpose of transporting the Limited's cargo between Ohio and Hong Kong, which is another one of these narco states. Hong Kong was won by the British during the Opium Wars and has been kind of a lawless gun and drug running zone ever since. How does one get to be the financial bundler for the CIA's main illicit arms trafficker in the Middle East without having any scrutiny from the Central Intelligence Agency? How does one personally negotiate the transfer of a CIA proprietary airline? By the way, Southern Air Transport declared bankruptcy in Columbus, Ohio, the very day the CIA put out an acknowledgement of Air America's role in the gun running and narco trafficking in Iran-Contra. Subsequent to that, the U.S. State Department personally made Jeffrey Epstein the tenant on the lease for one of the second largest residence in all of New York City. This residence was seized from the government of Iran as the U.S. was putting sanctions on it, and then personally leased out to Jeffrey Epstein. How do you have the State Department as your personal landlord? Do you think you or I, Jesse, could score something like that? The State Department then ended up in a legal dispute with Jeffrey Epstein because Jeffrey Epstein subleased that apartment to the defense lawyer for the French Connection and Pizza Connection drug scandals, where you had CIA involvement in narco trafficking that was effectively dealt, you know, hushed over in this trial through through this very defense lawyer that Jeffrey Epstein then leased the State Department building seized from Iran from. What I'm trying to communicate here is that every aspect of the Jeffrey Epstein story is part of the restructuring of intelligence work after the scandals of the 1970s, when the CIA was barred from doing activity directly, and that's when USAID came into the picture and took the baton from CIA, and these and the NGO apparatus that we're now living under with the National Endowment for Democracy and Internews and the U.S. Agency for U.S. Institute of Peace, and the web of private contractors and private financiers in order to be the front men for CIA operations. Jeffrey Epstein was present at creation of that entire apparatus. There is zero chance on God's green earth that there are no CIA files on this guy. And the fact that this Justice Department has effectively pointed us to the FBI when this is a CIA job is not a good look for transparency.
Dang, that is so much, Mike. Okay, so connect these worlds to me then. For most people, that is new information, as you always bring us. But most people know Epstein is this filthy trafficker of underage girls with very powerful men, royalty, billionaires, things like that. How does he end up there? Is it simply blackmail? Is that it? You're just hoovering up blackmail information because you bring in a president, former president, to cavort with underage women?
I don't believe I've not seen evidence, I should say, that Jeffrey Epstein was directly involved in blackmail operations. It would surprise me if he was. And I've studied this as much as anyone really humanly can. And the blackmail allegations, now certainly the CIA had a history of doing Jeffrey Epstein style sexual blackmail operations, actually in March of this year during the ODNI declassification of the JFK files. There was a very Jeffrey Epstein-like figure named Robert Mayhew, who the CIA was working with to do sexual entrapment of high-level political figures. And certainly the Jeffrey Epstein story can very much looks to be similar to the Robert Mayhew story. But the problem is once you're directly involved with blackmail of, say, a target in that network, word gets around quickly. You lose access to both that asset who is under the duress and coercion, as well as all of that asset's friends who they may tell and say, oh my God, this guy's blackmailing me. And then everybody in the network clams up. And when you're talking about a network of that size, I think that the access agent theory around Epstein is far closer to the mark, where what you have is a deal maker. What you have is someone. Think about the Iran-Contra situation, for example. You're talking about a very, very complex supply chain for illegal transport of illicit arms for a covert, deniable operation that spans four different countries. In that case, it was the U.S., Israel, the U.K., and Saudi Arabia, as well as their counterparts in Iran. So that's five countries who all need to keep it super hush-hush quiet. You need to move through a web of Cayman Islands offshore bank accounts and Panamanian offshore bank accounts. You need three dozen shell companies. You need the tax attorneys and legal teams. You need basically backdoor skid greasing and private commitments from a range of disparate individuals who stretch business, finance, diplomacy, intelligence. So somebody's got to know all those people, and somebody's got to set up those deals and keep formal government channels at the U.S. side out of it. Jeffrey Epstein was clearly doing that in the 1980s. He clearly retained involvement in that throughout at least the early 1990s, and then went on to this very high-profile, you know, banking life while he was power of attorney over the Les Wexner empire, and then, you know, proceeded to have a life of essentially cavorting with all of the world's richest and most famous people. To the extent that he continued to do intelligence work at that point, I would say certainly access and deal brokering would be sufficient to explain what he was doing. Now, it could be the case that he was passing on information to intelligence agencies, and separate folks within the intelligence world or other back channels may have used that information collected by Epstein. But I don't principally think of Epstein as being a blackmail story. I think of it as being a deal maker story. And that helps, having the capital to do that, the financial capital to do those deals, is essentially what makes the deals work, that he can negotiate them. And running, Epstein and company is private arm for doing that after his Intercontinental Assets Group agency folded up in the early 90s. It looks like that's when he transitioned into this more banking empire role that he had. But that's how I see the story. So it would not surprise me if there was no evidence around Epstein and blackmail. But that actually does not make the picture any less dark than it is, because if Epstein was still being used for deal making, for back channel diplomacy, for intelligence gathering, I think the American people, and frankly the entire world, has a right to know that. And given the state of the DOJ's handling of this, it doesn't look like we're going to be getting answers on that anytime soon.
Mike, okay, so let me ask this question this way then. If he is a guy with connections, and it certainly sounds like he has many, to CIA, possibly FBI, we don't know. But either way, these organizations have a long storied history of protecting criminals who are assets to them. Everyone knows that. I brought up John Donnelly and Whitey Bulger in the opening of the show. That's how it works, right? How does he end up in trouble? He ends up getting convicted of crimes. He ends up in jail. Who did he make angry?
Well, so when you're talking about the sheer number of witnesses and scale of the operation, things can get away. And oftentimes there's a turf battle between CIA and the State Department. This happened, for example, in the case of Rolando Masfer in the late 1960s. Rolando Masfer was a Cuban exile who was brought over by the Central Intelligence Agency in the late 50s, early 1960s, and was intimately involved in running a network of about 150 to 200 exile Cubans who were involved in everything from narcotics trafficking to gun running as part of the CIA activities in Operation Mongoose and the regionalization of the conflict against the government of Cuba. Now, so Masfer was working directly for and with the CIA for a time, and then he became a little too big for his britches, went rogue. The State Department told, he thought that the JFK administration, this is how he ended up in the JFK files, these documents I'm going to describe to you here. He ended up believing that the JFK administration was too soft on Castro, that it was not aggressive enough, it was not moving quickly enough, and that he needed to take matters into his own hands using the mercenary network that the CIA had helped him cultivate. And when the State Department, the Western Hemisphere officials told him that they were prohibiting him from unilaterally attempting a military coup in Cuba, their plan, Masfer's plan, was to take about 200 mercenaries to invade the island of Haiti and then use the Haitian docks as a means to essentially do a military attack on Cuba. The State Department said, "Don't do it. We are formally blocking you from doing this." He went ahead and tried to do it anyway. Customs and Border Patrol caught him and his men on the docks of Miami as they tried to run this this private operation. They prosecuted them under the State Department, then petitioned the DOJ to arrest Masfer for violations of the Diplomatic Neutrality Act. The CIA then intervened and told the Justice Department, don't prosecute them. So what you had was a proxy war. The State Department said, listen, these Cuban groups are getting out of control. We need to prosecute Masfer in order to send a message to all the other Cuban military groups who are thinking about doing this in the future, that they can't just set their own foreign policy on this. The CIA said, if you arrest Masfer, all this is going to get out. We're already under so much heat from the Ramparts disclosures and from Senate investigations into CIA malfeasance. If the extent of the Masfer CIA network comes out in a criminal trial, it will undermine all CIA activities out of the Miami branch. It will become a massive international scandal. And so the Justice Department was torn between the State Department's directive to pursue prosecution and the CIA's directive to stop prosecution and let him skate free. And effectively, they ended up in a compromise. The State Department is on top of CIA. The CIA formally has a relationship to state, just like FBI has to the Justice Department. Everything CIA does has to be authorized by state first. It's supposed to be the covert arm of the State Department, the same way the FBI is the covert arm of the Justice Department. So the State Department won that tug of war. Masfer was indicted by the Justice Department, but the conditions put on it were that the CIA was able to have a DOJ attorney embedded from CIA in order to midwife the prosecution, and in order to ensure that no evidence was admitted in trial that that revealed the CIA network involved. That is, they had the government employees petition the government prosecutors petition the judge to not allow any lines of evidence that might be brought up by the defendants that might reveal sources and methods or anyone in the CIA adjacent network. So they got the prosecution, but they kept the CIA secrecy. By the way, this is all public now, thanks to Tulsi Gabbard. You can look at the 1966 and 1967 CIA memos on Rolando Masfer in the March 2025 releases if you want to see all these documents. I also did a one-hour video presentation for my subscribers on X on this as well. But I think this is what happened in the Epstein case. I think Epstein was clearly CIA, whether in a formal or informal, more likely an informal role in the sense that the CIA would have had analyst memos, cables, a code name for Epstein, but not necessarily on payroll or a formal informant. And then I think you also have the international side of this, which is all the CIA activity that is done jointly with British intelligence, Israeli intelligence, Saudi intelligence, and I think a lot of those other governments may be exerting pressure on the Trump administration or the Justice Department in order to not reveal their role.
Oh, Lee. Mike, you are the best, my man. Go subscribe to him, by the way, on X and hoover up that video. Mike, my brother, as always, thank you. I appreciate you very much. It's ugly, isn't it? But tell me that wasn't one of the most fascinating things you've ever seen in your life. It's just an ugly world, spy games and assets and all kinds of things out there. Anyway, you know what else is ugly? AT&T. T-Mobile. Look, Verizon. These companies hate you. You know that? They hate your guts. They take your money and they use it to spread communist filth all over this country. Pure Talk's never done that, never would. Let me tell you why they never would, because that's quite a statement to make. Their CEO fought for this country in Vietnam. Mac V. Sog, 2 tours in Vietnam. A company so patriotic they hire Americans. When you get a hold of Pure Talk, you'll be speaking to an American who speaks English? It's almost odd. Someone pleasant? That's what America means to them. You will pay less for your cell phone. They're on the same network. It's time to switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so let's talk very briefly, not necessarily specifically about the floods, but about the despicable communist reaction to it. First, before we do that, pray. There are still people out there right now searching, hoping they don't discover something terrible. Pray. People have lost so much. Pray. This is a time to pray. Please pray for those families. Pray for this area. It's worse than you can imagine. It's a natural disaster worse than you can imagine. And because we've seen so much loss of life, it hurts you, right? It stirs something in you, no matter what. No matter what, you look at these videos and you see this death and these little girls and the families, and it wrecks you. And you want to do something, you want to help, you want to pray, you want to hope for the best, and that's good. I'm glad you have that heart. So why is it that you reacted like that and the communists reacted like this?
How much do you think the changing climate is part of what we are seeing go on here?
I think climate change is obviously a part of it.
Two Texas National Weather Service offices involved in forecasting and warning about flooding on the Guadalupe River are missing some key staff members. A director of the NWS union told CNN that the Austin San Antonio office is missing a warning coordination meteorologist due to the Trump administration's buyouts. Do you have any indication whether those or other cuts helped play a role in the fact that the people in the flood zone were not prepared and certainly not evacuated?
No, I can't say that conclusively.
Listen, New York Times ran the same thing, the exact same lies. By the way, those are all outright lies. There were extra staffers, the flood issue, that the warnings were all issued. It was all done right. Everything was done right. The media chose to lie about it. Why? Why would you even ask those questions when they're pulling dead girls out of the mud of the flood? Why would you even do that? Well, I just want to remind you that the communist does this after natural disasters, mass shootings, whatever it is, because that stirring that's inside of you as you look at these families and this loss does not exist inside of him. And it doesn't exist inside of him because human life to him is not sacred. It's not meaningful to him at all. And I know that's hard to understand that there are people like that out there, but Dana Bash, Castro, David Axelrod, the New York Times, these are all committed communists for whom there is no human tragedy, because when human beings are not valued, how can there be a human tragedy? For you, have you ever felt an ant tragedy when a bunch of ants die? Of course not. Because ants don't have some special meaning to you. In fact, they're meaningless. 1,000 of them could die. It would mean nothing to you. It would mean nothing to me. That's how communists view human life. And since human life is meaningless, doesn't have any value to them, it's not sacred to them, well, anytime there is a loss of life, communists view it as an opportunity to move the revolution forward. They are constantly being caught saying the most despicable things in the wake of tragedy, because for them, it's not a tragedy. I know that's hard to accept about your fellow man, but they are either indifferent to human suffering or flat out cheer it on because they are anti-humans. Solzhenitsyn called them the enemies of humanity, and that's exactly what they are. That's why they can look at photos of dead Christian girls and not be stirred in the least. They look at those photos and think, we can move the ball forward with this. I know it's sick, demonic, and evil, but I wanted you to understand that's why they do what they do. Now, that's enough of the ugly aspect of that. For lighten the mood, we're going to play you a wonderful aspect of that. Hang on. All right, let's lighten the mood. And it's hard to imagine there would be anything light about that horrible Texas flood. We just talked about so much loss, so much death, so much pain and suffering. It's awful. But, you know, in dark, dark moments, I've seen this many times in my life privately and big things. I've been involved in hurricanes and other things that in dark, dark moments, there is a light that shines. And this made me feel good.
It's fresh like spring. We want to pass it on. Here's for you, my friend. This happiness that I found.
Oh, my God.
Can't depend on it. It matters not where you're bound. I'll shout it from the mountaintops.
Praise God.
I want my world to know. The Lord of love has come to me. I want to pass it on. I'll shout it from the mountaintops. Praise God. I want my world to know. The Lord of love has come to me. I want to pass it on.
Dutch girls who just survived a living hell, praising God on the way out. A light shines in the dark. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.